From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 17th day of March 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley. He's at ADM Investor Services, located in Oakland, Illinois. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Matt Blaisdell of the Anderson's Climbers Facility. That's in Delphi, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, members of the House of Representatives are not happy with China. They'd like to deploy countervailing duty laws on that nation for supposed currency manipulation. And a judge has sided with sugar beet growers who planted a transgenic crop this season, saying only that opponents moved too late and that the economic cost to rip up the crop would be, well, too great. More to come on that story in future years for sure, and a bit later in this cast, too, from our own Dave Dickey. Drew Lerner, World Weather Incorporated of Kansas City, will join us as we close out our program. He'll help us take a look at the agricultural weather forecast, and along the way, I'll read to you some sage advice from Emerson Nafziger, agronomist here on the U of I campus. He posted it to the U of I's IPM Bulletin website, and it pertains to the lack of fall tillage. We'll talk about that as we make our way through this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
We would like to thank these sponsors who helped support the recent WILL 20th Annual All-Day Ag Outlook Meeting and all of our agricultural programs on air and online. Strategic Farm Marketing, Stuart Peterson, ADM, Risk Management Commodities, and Pioneer Seeds. Thank you.
Here's the way the numbers settled up in Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon. Futures in the wheat pit were 9 cents higher in the nearby May at $4.96. July at 5.08¾ up 9. September at 5.24¾, 9 cents higher. May corn futures 3.74 up 7¼. July at 3.85¼ up 7½. September at 3.94¾, 7½ higher there. And December at 4.04. up 7¼. March corn futures up 6¾ at $4.15. May soybeans 14 cents higher, $9.59 the high, or rather the settlement price. July at 9.66¾ up 14. August at 9.64 up 13¾. September 9.49¾ up 14. And November beans at 9.40½, the harvest month up 14½ cents. May bean meal 2.67¼ up 5.90. May oil at 39.83. up 46. April live cattle 96.15 today, 67½ cents higher. The March feeders at 103.27½, up 32½ cents. And the April contract in the lean hogs, the settlement price down 15 at 71.60, but the May up 32½ at 78.50. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, April contract, $82.93 a barrel, a settlement price, up $1.23. April ethanol at $1.59, up 4⅙. Natural gas at $4.29⅛, down 4Ⅹ. The RBOB at $2.30�07, that's down 3⅔. And the heating oil at $2.13�06, up 2⅔ for the day. That's diesel fuel. Gold futures at $1,124, up $1.80 on their settlement price. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 10,744, just about 58 points higher. The U.S. dollar at 79.64 is down 0.11. The CRB index, Commodity Research Bureau index at 276.30, is up 2.76 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like, as prepared by our own Ed Kieser. He says tonight should be clear to partly cloudy across Illinois and Indiana. Lows will range from 30 in northeastern Indiana to 42 in Chicago. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny skies, says Ed. Highs will range between 63 and 68. Dry and mild weather will continue through Friday. High temps today mostly in the upper 50s to low 60s. High tomorrow and Friday mostly in the 60s. Lows the rest of the week will be in the 30s and the 40s. Some more rain will pass through during the first half of the weekend. Showers and thunderstorms likely arriving in the northwestern part of Illinois late Friday night. That'll overspread the two-state region on Saturday. Models indicate, says Ed, that this system is now moving faster, so the rain will likely taper off from west to east Saturday night, with mostly dry weather on Sunday. Cooler weather will prevail on Sunday and Monday, with some snow showers possible in northern and central sections as a weak disturbance moves through Sunday night. Temperature, said Ed, will quickly rebound to milder levels, rather, Tuesday and Wednesday, and the next chance of rain will be Wednesday and Thursday of next week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services from Oakland, Illinois, joins us now to take a look at the agricultural futures markets. It's a gorgeous day outside today, Paul, and the numbers were green in Chicago, reflecting I'm not quite sure what. Can you tell me about it?
Yeah, the market's pretty stout. And looking backwards, our beef house outlook was probably the most bearish time of the year. I think one of the things that we have to talk about here is, of course, the crude oil market was extremely strong. The marketplace is noting, you know, the market was very short wheat, very short soybeans. The weekend commitment of traders report indicated that the market was long corn. There is this war cry in the marketplace. We heard it on CNBC and some of the market reports about the very wet weather and flooding and things of this nature. I did talk to one of my favorite meteorologists that said he thinks the trend is changing, and he gave me three reasons. Number one, you know, the snow melts, basically changing. That the Canadian Canada has been warmer than normal, and he says it's going to cool down. And the El Nino is basically dying a slow death, and he thinks the trend is going to be for better weather. It'll be interesting to see when it does show up, but, you know, the guys in Iowa say that basically the snow cover is basically gone, and, you know, the moisture, the flooding is disappearing, and things are changing. But the marketplace put in some very strong performances. You can even argue that the trend is up now in corn. You can argue that the trend is up in soybeans and very close in the wheat. So a lot of short covering. Maybe we need to buy acres. Maybe we need to buy world production. And as a result of that, this is good news for the farmers today with these higher closes.
Higher closes, and you could argue that the trend is higher. Do you believe that's the case? And on the secondary side of it, rather than buying acres, do you think they should sell old crop?
Well, we are sold, and that makes me feel good. I think one of the things that we're probably looking at is establish, at least if in these commodity fund-driven markets, you know, looking for a place to establish some short positions in the marketplace. We think that the market is still going to struggle. We still think that the market is looking at some very large production numbers in world carryovers and corn, wheat, and soybeans. I think our outlook meeting basically indicated that last year's 3 million acre reduction in the planting intentions report was basically based on high fertilizer prices and some surveys, and I don't think anyone is expecting the government to be bashful about talking about a large acreage this spring. So I think if the weather turns with this larger machinery, with spray coops, guidance systems, and some new tillage systems, you know, I think the market will be ready for production agriculture 2010, and a person has to take advantage of it. But am I in the camp that we need to buy back, you know, previous higher-level sales? I don't think so at this time.
All right. What that'd be for corn? Are you in a different sort of outlook for beans or
I
not?
Think the beans are still very bearish, and I think we could look at, you know, some substantially lower prices in the months to come. But this is a futures market, and things are subject to change.
Did you read the notes about logistical problems out of South America at this point in terms of exports to China and figure out what that really meant?
Well, you know, I saw a couple of headlines. Number one, that in Paraguay, I think there were some 15-mile lines of trucks dumping, and you know, we did hear at the Outlook meeting that several of the countries, Brazil and Argentina, both have geared up their ability to load ships. I think the big factor is that it's an enormous crop, and we get the feeling, I think, the Brazilian farmer is a little slower than normal as far as marketing his crop. As far as the China connection, I missed that one. What did it say?
Well, I guess, and I was trying to get a better handle on it, but apparently there was some thought that there were logistical problems getting beans out of South America into the export market, whether that was headed to China or Rotterdam or wherever it might
be. I think that, you know, the modern grain company has spent tons of money down there to take advantage of it, and, you know, it's nothing like USA, but they know how to put beans on a belt and put them on a boat just as good as anywhere in the world, and you know, they're gearing up their infrastructure, and I don't think it's going to be very long.
Logistically, it's probably a loadout snag, and for instance, a 15-mile line would indicate there's a snag
somewhere.
Yeah, I
think there's enough beans there to move out, and you know, their transportation system is improving as well, and my hunch is that any delays in logistics are going to be temporary because they've beefed that system up tremendously.
Any final word from you before I let you go for the day?
The stock market also is putting in a good performance, and the energy market, and so those are two good indicators.
Sunshine and spring is here, isn't it?
Have a good day.
You too. Thank you much. That's Paul Cooley with ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. Happens each and every Wednesday afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Hey, there are three ways to listen to our programming. You can hear it on the radio. You can get it at willag.org on the web. Or you can dial this number, 217-333-3434. We call it our mobile analyst portal. It's updated at 10:15 and 3:15 each and every business day with either the opening or the closing numbers and a bit of analysis. That's at 217-333-3434 for the telephone, WILLAG.org for the internet, and, of course, this radio station. Now here's Dave Dickey with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, a group of legislators comprising nearly a third of the House of Representatives is calling on the Obama administration to apply countervailing duty laws on China for what they charge is that country's manipulation of the value of its currency. In letters to Commerce Secretary Gary Locke and Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner, 130 House members say the legal action should be undertaken in concert with bilateral and multilateral pressure. However, they add, if the combination of legal and diplomatic measures fail, the administration should consider all tools available to it, including the application of tariffs on imports from China. The House Ways and Means Committee has scheduled a March 24th hearing on China's currency policies and their effects on trade with the United States. Meanwhile, today, China says it will not waver in sticking to a stable exchange rate and is being made a scapegoat after the U.S. Congress threatened to seek duties on Chinese goods unless it revalues its yuan. A Chinese Commerce Ministry official today says that focusing on the yuan will not help to solve problems in the Sino-U.S. bilateral trade relationship. And in Geneva, a senior China diplomat today says that U.S. lawmakers are unfairly blaming Beijing for their own woes. China has, in effect, pegged the yuan near 6.83 to the dollar since mid-2008 to cushion its exporters from the global crisis. A federal judge on Tuesday said farmers can harvest their genetically engineered sugar beets this year, ruling the economic impact too great and that environmental groups waited too long to request that the crop be yanked from the ground and otherwise barred from the market. Nearly all sugar beets planted are genetically engineered, and the crop accounts for half of the nation's sugar supply. Now the battle turns to whether the judge will bar future plantings of genetically engineered seeds. The judge says he wants farmers to use as much conventional seed as possible, but did not say if he would bar the biotech variety. U.S. Chief Economist Joseph Glauber says that ethanol made from cellulose is still a long way from being commercially viable. Glauber says the feedstocks for cellulosic ethanol are very cheap or even free, but the distribution system to funnel large amounts of these feedstocks to commercial-scale cellulosic ethanol plants is not yet in place. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report and of Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Now, this morning, I had a very long conversation with Emerson Nafziger. He's the agronomist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. We talked about tillage and short-season corn hybrids and a bit about anhydrous. You'll hear about those in the coming days and weeks. Earlier this month, Emerson penned an article for the IPM Bulletin that can be found on our website at www.ipm.illinois.edu/bulletin. And that article was all about tillage and what producers can and cannot do and maybe shouldn't worry about as they take a look at our field that's in pretty rough condition this spring. I'll have some of that for you in a moment. Farmers planted corn into wet soils last year and caused a considerable amount of compaction. They'd hoped to fix that with a little fall tillage, but the rains just kept coming, and instead of fixing the problem, it was compounded by the late harvest. Now today, some soils are compacted, have deep ruts from the harvest season, and are filled with corn stalks still in good condition. About the compaction, University of Illinois agronomist Emerson Nafziger says farmers simply need to live with it and hope they can do a good job of deep tillage next fall to relieve it. About the corn stalks that didn't break down over the winter, well, they're likely to keep soils wet this spring. And Nafziger says without an early period of warm, dry weather, it remains unlikely soils will dry enough to allow effective tillage before planting starts. Soils simply don't dry rapidly until soil temperatures are in the 50s and 60s, and that doesn't usually happen until April or even May. In the meantime, he says it will be helpful to find ways to disturb the soil surface and to cut and move and perhaps bury some of the residue. This will help dry the soil surface to allow earlier and more uniform planting. Chisel plows are unlikely to work, and field cultivators will probably not get through standing corn stalks. Well, the agronomist says lighter disc harrows might work better than most alternatives to perform shallow tillage of corn stalks. Disc rippers might be adjustable enough to work too, but implement weight should be as light as possible to avoid causing more compaction. Now, some believe spring disking is the reason for disastrous compaction, but Nafziger argues that heavy equipment causes this compaction, not the shallowness or pattern of secondary tillage. The only real blame a relatively light tillage implement earns, he says, is being run shallow, making the break between the tilled and the untilled soil easy to find. Vertical tillage may be possible, as these shallow tillage implements are typically run at high speeds, something over 10 miles an hour. They consist of rolling blades that chop stalks and cut into the soil, ripple or wavy coulters, rolling spikes of some sort, and in some cases, leveling boards or blades. They do not produce a distinct break between tilled and untilled soil like the disc or the field cultivator. About strip till, Nafziger believes it may be best to remove the knives and use this implement to clear some residue off the rows and do light tillage, leaving small berms. He cautions farmers from placing anhydrous ammonia into wet soils during a spring strip-till operation, as it will stay concentrated and may very well move back towards the roots if the soil happens to dry out. Tillage may be necessary to handle corn stalks and ruts. That's kind of a bottom line. To make a good seed bed to plant into, farmers must find a way to fill in ruts completely without leaving pockets that interfere with seeding uniformity. In the majority of cases, tillage might be needed to do an adequate job of filling ruts. And finally, Knapsiger says soybeans may be a better option than corn in untilled fields of corn stalks. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media on a Wednesday afternoon. Time to check the cash grain market. The folks at the Andersons at their Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana are on the line. Aaron Anderson is with us this afternoon. Hi, Aaron. How are you today?
Pretty good.
You know, lots of sunshine. It's warm and has been for a couple of days. Anybody moving grain or oilseed your way?
We are seeing quite a flow of corn here. You know, the last week and a half or so, basis has weakened up just a hair at Climbers for March, but we are seeing a decent flow of corn at us at the moment.
Yeah, are those new sales or those that are on the books already?
A little bit of both. A lot of new sales coming on here today, more so than any other day in the last 7 to 10, but quite a few contracts that were already on the books as well.
Basis weakened up a bit. I suppose that would have been expected with 3 days of upward movement in the marketplace?
Correct.
And how's your ethanol plant doing?
Running to capacity. No real issues that we've seen here in the last couple months, actually. So everything's going fairly smooth.
You talked about with your colleagues what the next 2 or 3 weeks looks like in the way of deliveries from producers. Do they have corn that's going out of condition that they'll want to move in before they get into the field?
Yeah, I think we still are going to see a fairly heavy flow here as we get into early April, in the last part of March. Quality is still a concern around our area with the vomitoxin issue that's been present this year. So I would expect to see a fairly steady flow as we go, you know, at least through the first half of April.
How odd is it in your area, or is your area with the vomitoxin? It seems like there's a place in maybe DeKalb, maybe around Lafayette. Are there other places? Is it pretty common, do you think, or not across the Midwest?
Fairly common in our area, as well as southern Michigan and part of Ohio. Just in our local area here in north central Indiana, it seems like the further north you go, the worse of an issue it becomes.
Yeah, and how much of a problem really is it?
I would say it affects probably 30 to 40% of the loads we see each day are discountable.
That's a lot of loads. What's the average discount coming in?
You know, average, I would say a nickel to 10 cents probably.
It's not as bad as I thought it might be.
Yeah.
It could be a lot worse. What are your bids for the day?
Today for March into Climbers, 360.
All right. And for soybeans?
Soybeans into Delphi, 949.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That is Aaron Anderson. He's with the Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana, that belongs to the Andersons. Joins us on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Wednesday afternoon. Back in just a moment or two, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City about the agricultural weather forecast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. Illinois' next statewide primary election will be held in mid-March, about 6 weeks later than the previous two primaries. Governor Quinn has signed a measure that pushes the primaries from early February to the third Tuesday in March after complaints that the February vote was too early in the year. It was moved there in 2008 to help native son Barack Obama in the presidential race. But Champaign County Republican Chair Jason Merrickman says moving the primary back to its previous date will shorten a very lengthy campaign season and draw more voters out in better weather. County Democratic Chair Al Klein says he's okay with the change, too, though he says the February primary was suitable as well. The Urbana School District has spent more than $2.6 million settling lawsuit claims by students who were taught by now-convicted child molester John White. School district records show settlements ranging from $190,000 to $450,000 were paid to 9 students and their families. The Bloomington Pantograph used the Freedom of Information Act to obtain details about the settlements. Families and school officials can't talk about them under the terms of the deals. White is serving 60 years in prison for molesting 9 girls at an Urbana school and 2 more in Normal. The Urbana School District hired White after he was forced to resign in Normal. Normal District Attorney James Kern says settlement agreements with 2 students there aren't final. A federal judge in Chicago says former Governor Rod Blagojevich's trial will begin as scheduled on June 3rd. This morning, U.S. District Judge James Zagel dismissed complaints from the ousted former governor's attorneys that they had too much work to prepare for that date, lobbying for a November 3rd start. Attorneys also cited the possibility that the U.S. Supreme Court might find some of the charges in the indictment unconstitutional. A warning from the U.S. State Department is urging visitors to Mexico to avoid northwest portions of the country amid recent drug-related violence. Heeding that warning, a mass email from the University of Illinois today suggests any students planning to travel there for spring break to consider a change of plans. And U of I Study Abroad Director Stephen Nussbaum says any student crossing state lines for academic reasons should be registered with his office and purchase health and medical evacuation insurance. Nussbaum says any student traveling to Mexico needs to be vigilant, studying the country's laws ahead of time and watching their belongings closely. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural weather. Drew Lerner, World Weather Incorporated, joins us. He is in Canada today. Thanks for being with us, and especially thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule, Drew.
Well, no problem for you guys, anything.
Absolutely. Is it still white up there?
It is, actually. It's a beautiful day. Actually, Canada, Western Canada, has had unseasonably warm weather for the last 2 weeks. It's been actually as warm as 64 degrees in southern Alberta in the last week. There's no snow on the ground over a large part of Alberta and western Saskatchewan, and there's a lot of worry up here about drought this year. So it may be all wet and cold down in the States, but up in the western part of the prairie, it's a different world.
I have a question about that then, because much of what we get in the way of weather might sweep across there parts of the year. I don't know whether that would be in the springtime very much. I would think it would be more of a westerly flow. But not having snow cover make much of a difference for what happens in the upper northwestern part of the Midwest?
Actually, it would have a little bit of a benefit for us in reducing the amount of cold air that would come southward. But really the source even for Western Canada is still the Arctic. And if the Arctic decides to get cold, then everybody else is going to get cold too. And I think it doesn't really matter a whole lot about the snow in Canada or not. And that's a generalization. Obviously, if there's a lot of snow on the ground in Canada and we bring cold air through it, it doesn't modify as much. And so we end up with colder weather down in the States. So without the snow, that is a possibility. Now, probably the bigger issue here is the old El Nino, which is really responsible for removing the snow up here. It's also responsible for building a high-pressure ridge over western parts of Canada, creating that northwesterly flow, which has kept the state so cool for such a long period of time. It's actually been part of a more complicated circulation pattern that is partially due to our solar minimum that we're in right now. Both those have been working together to create this very strong and very unusual southward shift in the cold air around the northern hemisphere. So once El Nino starts weakening, which is already beginning, but it'll become more enhanced in April and May, we should start seeing a breakdown in the cool bias. But it's going to take a while, and we are still under the influence of this solar minimum that we're in right now, and that will still keep us cool at times during the summer.
But we've been pretty warm here in east central Illinois the last couple of days, and some sunshine. Are we going back to cooler weather?
Yes. A large part of the U.S. Will see cooler conditions as we go through the weekend coming up and on into next week. I don't know that we're necessarily going to be unseasonably cold, but we're going to have a cool northwesterly flow pattern again, and a couple of storm systems passing through the region to produce more precipitation, just what we don't want to see around. And so the end result is going to be a continuation of muddy fields and some areas of standing water, and we could get a stronger storm out there at some point in the next week or 10 days, and that could generate a much heavier rain event, of course, and then we'll have to deal with some greater amounts of standing water.
Yeah, 10 or 15 seconds. The Delta area has not moved very quickly this spring. Will they get an opportunity?
Well, they're doing a little bit better right now, and I think that they will limp along for a while. Their mid to late spring season is going to be ideal, though. I do think that they will get out of the mess that they're in, and they will do a lot better. But they've got another 2 or 3 weeks to go before they can get to that point.
Drew, thanks so much.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great day, too.